None of this is working. I've listened to the tapes, I've studied the manuals, I've tried disconnecting and reconnecting the cables. There's something I'm missing. There has to be. It's probably something simple. You can't tell me that every person who came through this space was a genius. Not everyone who had a direct hand in the events that ruined so many lives can have been that much smarter than me. Whatever I'm missing is taunting me, as though it's calling from across a chasm I have no way of traversing. I am calling from control. Honestly, I thought it would all be so much easier than it has been. Finding the bunker was supposed to be the hard part. The cabin in the hill? As it turns out, merely illusions. Projections set up to easily confuse people not possessed of a curious mind. Either that, or they were merely illusions to me, and once I actually approached them with clear direction in mind, they faded away. Whatever the reason, isn't important. What is important is that I was able to relocate the bunker, make my way through its metallic depths and come upon control. And now, I feel like I've spent weeks here, trying to figure out how they set up their loops, what the parameters were, what limitations can be put upon them, if there's a way to include or exclude certain elements. I believe I've found the mechanism that sets them into motion, if you can truly call a loop to space and time motion. And yet, no matter what I do, nothing seems to be happening. The button that I used to reset everything the last time doesn't appear. No bells ring, and there are no fans whirring to life. Stepping outside doesn't yield anything different. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I would try to get Jenny to get to the bottom of this with me, but she hasn't been seen in ages. I thought about asking Anthony, but he would be no help at all, and doesn't even believe me when I start talking about the bunker. Lorraine? She's trapped within the Owl's Nest diner and clearly can't leave for whatever reason. It's so incredibly frustrating. I should have been able to puzzle through all of this by now, and nothing is working. I play the tapes again, searching for any clue I might have been missing. As the last tape winds down, I hear a scurrying noise behind me. Turning slowly, I spot from a distance a few sets of reflective glass orbs seeming to follow me from the shadows. I need to get out of here and head back to the diner. The dolls have found me. I'll figure out the loop later.
With Amelia away, I had an opportunity of my own to sneak away from the Owl's Nest. I wish I could say that I had something important that I needed to work on, some noble cause that would help chart a new path for Elm Lake, in spite of everything we're going through right now. But I am not as noble as Amelia, and I'm not great at pretending. Which is why, long after she had departed to work on whatever puzzle she was keeping from us, I left the diner as well. Lorraine didn't seem to notice that I was still there anyway, although she did mutter something about me being back soon as I reached the door. Her conversation had all turned towards her doll. So I left. A part of me considered heading home, to retreat to bed, sleep, and hopefully a different perspective tomorrow. That was just a small part of me, however. The larger pull was to return to my studio, to where my own doll was waiting. I'd been away for too long. They would clearly be worried about me. I hadn't left them with food or drink or even a comfortable spot to lay. I thought about taking Jenny's basket just in case I ran across her on my path through town, but decided I didn't want to be burdened. I'm sure she's fine and that she'll return to her favorite breakfast location soon in order to be reunited with her possessions. Upon returning to the broadcast studio, I noticed that darkness was cast like a shroud over the entire building. The dials weren't dancing, the lights weren't flickering, and there was no barely perceptible hum filling the air. I also noticed that some of the cables had been disconnected, and the primary microphone was unplugged and seemingly tossed across the room. The place looked ransacked and abandoned, certainly not in the state that I left it in. I worked feverishly, trying to get everything back into working condition. Not being an engineer, I'm not sure if things are all connected properly, but at least I've got the lights and dials back. The hum has returned as well. And that's when I noticed that two things I've grown accustomed to are missing. There are no rose petals scattered around inside the studio. My doll is nowhere to be seen. The first of those two things brings mild concern. I've grown used to seeing them and used to puzzling over their meaning. If nothing else, they were a connection to the world outside of Elm Lake. A chance to learn more about what's just beyond our borders, simply by discovering who was leaving them behind. The second disappearance fills me with dread. What could have happened to them? I waited so long to finally get my own. Now they're gone? How could I have been so foolish as to leave it behind here? I was clearly too preoccupied with my own thoughts, and too much time was spent at the Owl's Nest. I never should have left the studio, and I'm not sure how to even begin to forgive myself. As I found myself on the edge of panic, I heard tapping. What sounded almost like footsteps, albeit far too small of ones. The hum that had returned was suddenly silenced. A small chuckle escaped from the shadows under the desk, for the dials and lights on the board were snuffed out again. Darkness lay before me. Behind me, moonlight filtered in through the open door, casting a silvery outline on the shadows just in front of me. I took one cautious step backwards, and then a second. The tiny footsteps continued to sound in the studio. The chuckling grew deeper. More ominous. I hear words echoing inside of my own skull. A repeating mantra telling me to join, become, ascend. It took all of my mental fortitude to run. I need to get back to the diner.
The streets of Elm Lake are so quiet. It isn't like when the snows were blanketing us. No, it's a different level of quiet. One that sneaks into people's homes and doesn't relinquish itself from the streets. It's the type of quiet that can be encountered in a ghost town, where time and reality has moved on, leaving abandoned buildings and storefronts in their wake. Oh, I miss how much easier it was to run into people in the streets. It feels like it's been months since I've seen anyone. Outside of my dolls, of course. I have amassed quite the collection. I've got my own little Elm Lake improvisational quartet. I've been able to find an Angus Thorpe. That's one of my newer acquisitions. All in all, I've been able to gather dolls to represent much of Elm Lake. But all that pales in light of my newest doll. One that I was sure wouldn't be created. The owners of the Glass Eye have been very secretive about how they've decided which citizens will be created in doll form. But I just never assumed that this particular resident would find themselves carved in wood. And I got her before anyone else did. I know I did, because I happened to be at the Glass Eye when Samantha and Marissa were conferring about her. Whether or not it was right, I can only assume the craftsmanship. Marissa stormed off, leaving Samantha behind the counter. For her part, Samantha didn't look that put off, simply pulling out a doll-sized chair and setting the newest work of art into it. At the foot of the chair was a sign reading, "Limited Edition, Newly Released." And I made a beeline to the counter to make the purchase. I'm not sure why I felt in such a rush, as there was nobody else present in the doll shop. But I needed to add her to my growing collection. And I didn't want to run the risk of anyone else coming in and seeing her there. It did appear that there was a missing accessory, but the addition of the red ribbon over the eyes was a nice, if creepy, touch. Maybe it was just a way to conceal that particular piece of craftsmanship until I got her home. But now, she's mine. A doll I wasn't certain would even exist. All mine. I'll bring her home soon, but first, I'm starving. I wonder if the Owl's Nest Diner is open.
It's dark again. I know it isn't actually, because little bits of light sneak around the edges of the blindfold Samantha placed over my eyes again. For me, though, it's dark. It's been dark for so long that I've stopped even worrying about what I can or cannot see. I've been instead trying to focus on what I can feel. The answer to that, unfortunately, is not much. Touch has been dulled. The ribbon over my eyes should be irritating, but it's merely a dull presence. I still can't get my limbs to move, and I can barely even acknowledge that my hands are resting on my lap. I think they're together, but with the muted sense of touch, I can't be positive. My hearing is fine, and I heard Marissa and Samantha arguing over what had been done to me. I wasn't sure which one I trusted least, as they both seemed to have their own agenda. It seems like it's an old argument, one that's been repeated many times, and Marissa even talked about having to move towns again. Samantha seemed to be arguing for necessity and how close it made everything. I wanted to shut out their voices. Suddenly, I find myself being lifted into the air, jostled around a bit, and then, oddly, carried. It's a bizarre sensation. I was so focused on trying to not hear the owners of the Glass Eye that I forgot entirely about the customers. While my brain cannot make sense of what exactly is happening or how, it does seem that I'm being carried, that I was purchased. I hear a voice, clipped, barely recognized, asking about a missing accessory. My doll? I haven't felt her since Marissa took her for repairs. No, something else. Something different. My mind races trying to recall what it could be, and for a moment, I almost think I touch another person's thoughts with my own. Hunger. Basket. I instinctively pull back. I hear a small gasp escape my lips, even if I don't know how, and I don't recall having taken a breath. I attempt to reach my mind out again, waiting to find something to latch onto. Something to help me regain my sense of self and to escape whatever this strange predicament is. There it is again. The mind thinking about hunger and the nest? A diner waiting with open arms? Just beyond that mind, there are more. Dozens. Hundreds. It's the dolls. It's their own hunger. And they aren't waiting. They're preparing.
Calling from Elm Lake, episode 43, Chased, was written and produced by Sean Monahan. The voice of Elm Lake is Sean Monahan. The voice of Amelia Ashford is Maddie Stewart. The voice of Marcus Grant is Mick Reyna. The voice of Jenny Fowler is Emma Sala. Opening and closing themes written and performed by Sean Monahan. All other music written and performed by Matt McInnes. Find out more at machinismusic.com. Thank you for listening to our ongoing tale. If you've enjoyed our story so far, please leave a rating and review. Word of mouth will help us continue to grow and unfold new tales in our universe. You can also join us at www.patreon.com/callingfromelmlake to help support us as independent artists carving out our own space in this creative world. Lives are meant to interweave. Sometimes that weaving is loose as the different threads of individual lives take their own paths and journeys, one that cannot be followed by too many. Other times the weaving is tight, as the threads are in lockstep with each other, every journey down the path joined to another. Recognize the places where the weaving is loose, and cherish the times where the weaving is tight. Above all else, however, do not cling too long to the places where the weaving fully disconnects from other threads. Those paths are no longer for your thread to follow, and doing so will only lead to more harm than good. If their weave reconnects, you'll find the knot.